There are around 50,000 immigrants in jails around the country. Their next stop could be either a court or a one-way ticket out of the country. Our next guest has just written a book that argues against the mass detention of undocumented immigrants. It's called Migrating to Prison, America's Obsession with Locking Up Immigrants, and it's out this month. Cesar Cuauhtemoc Garcia Hernandez is the author. He's an immigration lawyer who teaches law at the University of Denver. Welcome.
It's a pleasure to be here, Jeremy.
When you say right at the beginning of the book that having permission to be here in the United States isn't necessarily a guarantee of freedom, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, I mean that there are lots of people who have green cards. That is, they have permission to be in the United States, to live and work here as long as they like. And if for one reason or another they violate immigration law, or to be more accurate, the federal government thinks that they violated immigration law, they can find themselves locked up and put into the deportation process. And that doesn't matter. You don't get saved from that, you know, just because you have kids or because you served in the U.S. Army.
What do you mean the federal government thinks that they violated immigration law? Wouldn't it be a clear-cut situation?
No. The immigration law is far too complicated for any on-the-ground official to really have a clear sense of when it is that somebody is going to be deported. The reality is that there are lots of legal claims that people can make, but only if they have a lawyer. And the reality is that in immigration courts, there is no right to appointed counsel, which means that you get to have a lawyer by your side as you're making your last argument to stay in the U.S., but only if you can pay for one.
Well, and when you say the people who are locked up as they're waiting for things to move through the legal process, how many people are we talking about?
Oh, we're talking in a given year, we're talking about anywhere from 400,000 to 500,000. This is true now under President Trump, but it's also true under President Obama. And I think this is an important part of the story that I'm trying to tell.
Well, and when you look back at the history of this, you point out in your book that in 1970, prosecutors charged only 575 people with an immigration crime. In 2013, that number was almost 98,000 people who were facing immigration charges. What happened?
Toward the end of the Bush administration, the federal government decided that they would take a hardline approach to people who are potentially violating immigration law. And the clearest way of doing that in the U.S. legal system is to throw people into the criminal justice system. So it's been a crime since 1929, in fact, to enter the United States without the government's permission, or to do that after having previously been deported. But the reality was, as those figures evidence, that for most of that time, federal prosecutors didn't prioritize immigration law violations. They had bigger fish to fry, and that's how they were spending their limited resources. And that started to change toward the end of the George W. Bush administration. That continued under the 8 years of President Obama, and that certainly hasn't shifted gears under President Trump.
You say hasn't shifted gears under President Trump. Many would look at the situation now and say President Trump has taken a much harder line on immigrants than President Obama did.
I think when it comes to the number of people who are locked up, we see that under President Obama, we had more people inside immigration prisons than ever before in the history of the United States until President Trump. And so there certainly has been an increase, but I think that when we have one historical record surpass another historical record, we have to describe that as a trend, not as a parting of ways.
You have worked on a number of immigration cases. What are these immigration prisons like? How much access to them and to migrants in them did you have?
Well, as a lawyer, you certainly have a privileged access to these facilities. But the hard part is that many people inside these facilities don't have the money to hire a lawyer. So they're hoping to find somebody who's going to work for free, work pro bono. And certainly that does happen, but that does mean that the number of people who are going into these facilities is limited. When you do go into these facilities, what you realize is that they look a whole lot like a prison. And ICE, for example, likes to call them detention centers or service processing centers. But when you go through layers of barbed wire fencing, when you go through metal detectors, and when you go through, when there are steel doors that close shut behind you, mm-hmm. It feels a whole lot like a prison. It looks a whole whole lot like a prison, and you can call it whatever you like. But for the folks who can't get out and who have a hard time finding people who are willing to come in, it certainly feels like they're in isolation in the way that most of us think prisons do.
Well, and in some cases, these are county jails that are housing migrants. In some cases, they're privately run, right?
That's correct. Actually, the majority of the facilities that the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency uses are county jails that are purporting to be nothing more than penal institutions.
Well, and some people might hear you say that and say, well, of course, that's where people who are breaking the law should be. You make the argument in this book that that's not the case.
Well, I don't think that we need to. I think anytime that we are contemplating locking up people, depriving them of their liberty, we have to ask why. What it is that we're trying to accomplish by doing that, and can we accomplish it equally well or better without depriving people of their liberty? And I think in this context in particular, there are some compelling reasons to suggest that locking up people doesn't actually promote the rule of law. It doesn't actually make any of us safer. And on the contrary, given the difficulties with accessing legal representation while locked up and going through the immigration court process, locking up people actually, I think, has the effect of subverting the legal process.
So what would you suggest?
I think that we should take the money that we're currently spending on immigration prisons. The ICE, for example, in 2017 spent $2.7 billion on its prison network. We should take that money and redirect it, paying for lawyers, direct it to paying for social workers who are going to make sure that people who are going through what is inherently a high stress process have some amount of stability in their lives, making sure that they understand the process, but also how to get there.
What do you say to people, though, who completely disagree with what you're saying and would say, why should we help people? Give them lawyers, give them psychologists, whatever the case may be, when really the message that should be sent to people who are coming into the country without documentation is you're not allowed to be here. Go back home.
Yeah. Well, first of all, we're talking about a very diverse group of people, including people who have every right to be here under the law. We have a legal system that allows for people to come to the U.S. and claim asylum if they fear for their lives, if they're sent back to whatever country they're fleeing from. We have other folks who are locked up who have green cards. I spoke to a gentleman who whose name is Jerry Armijo, and he was born in Mexico, not far from where I was born in South Texas. We both went to school in South Texas public schools, and after high school, I went off to college, but he went off to the U.S. Army. He joined the Army and got sent to Iraq, and one day, his tank got blown up by an IED. And he got sent back to the U.S. and to South Texas, and he didn't get the care that he needed. And so he turned to self-medicating through drugs, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And eventually the police caught up with him. And my family's law firm eventually came across him through his parents because one day he just stopped showing up for court dates. And the reason was that ICE had picked him up and sent him into an immigration prison. So this is somebody who we trusted with literal tanks. This is somebody who volunteered to defend the United States, to put his life on the line and came very close to actually losing it. And then because of one bomb and a poor, an insufficient mental health care system and some bad decisions, he was locked up in an immigration prison and facing the possibility of deportation. So this is not a homogenous group that we could just talk about in broad terms. These are very complicated, contradictory individuals.
That brings me to one more point I want to get to with you, which is that President Trump, especially, but many people, including President Trump, have talked about the idea that there should really be a zero tolerance policy for undocumented immigrants when it comes to crimes that they commit. He has highlighted the crimes, violent crimes in some cases, that have been committed by undocumented immigrants. You say in this book that basically we need to hold undocumented immigrants to the exact same standard that we hold everybody else.
We need to hold immigrants, whether they're documented or not, to the very same standards that we hold people like me, who were born into their citizenship. Jerry Armijo, he developed a criminal history because he messed up after going through some trauma in Iraq, defending the United States. His moral claim to the United States isn't weaker than mine is, simply because my mother happened to be in Texas when I was born, and his mother happened to be about 10 miles south of where I was born. So this claim that some people are on worse footing, or should be on worse footing, because they happen to be born outside the United States, I think it takes a very narrow view of belonging in this community that we call the United States. All of us mess up, but it's not because we're U.S. citizens or not U.S. citizens. It's just because we're people. I would like to see an immigration law enforcement system that takes into account the fact that we're all fallible creatures. And if we're out looking for only the extraordinary migrants to welcome into our community, then I think we need to start by looking inward first and asking, you know, how extraordinary, how perfect are those of us who are making those requests?
That is Cesar Cuauhtemoc Garcia Hernandez, whose new book is called Migrating to Prison: America's Obsession with Locking Up Immigrants. Cesar, thank you.
It's been a pleasure, Jeremy.